This is In Our Gayborhood.
And when you're working in these spaces as a queer person, whatever it is your reaction is, say it inside first, and then say the second thing your brain comes up with out loud. Because what I wanted to say with these leaders is, like, are you for real right now?
That's Chanel Tai, educator, EDI strategist, and facilitator. You know, EDI like equity, diversity, and inclusion. Sometimes it's also DEI. We first met last October while I was doing research for our second episode, From Soccer to Soji. A friend and colleague introduced us, and I invited Chanel for a walk around Trout Lake. The more we talked, the more parallels I saw in our experiences. Professional, social, personal.
As a BIPOC queer educator, where you are often the only in the room, you know? Or if you're not the only, you're part of a small group that people are always going to, whether you're interested or not interested in like promoting SOGI inclusion or queer inclusion and anti-racism, people are always going to ask you for your perspective. I think I just kind of kept falling into that queer inclusion, anti-racism piece. And, you know, like, the work that we do is intersectional, and it's important that it's intersectional.
I'm a queer educator of color, too, and often we're asked to speak for all BIPOC folks. But even when we have space to speak, we're not always heard.
It's still heavy, which is wild. Like, it's still with me. The amount of work that I had to do just to get the people who were on my side to understand that our side was broader, mm-hmm. right? That queer experience was broader.
But the thing is, Chanel's voice is one of many. I've talked to so many other activists and educators, and they say the same things. And educators like Bell Hooks and Paulo Freire have written so much about the ways our education systems exhaust us. So I wanted to know, what can I learn about being a queer activist while BIPOC? And why is it so hard? Welcome, neighbor. This is In Our Gayborhood, the oral history podcast where we chronicle the stories of 2S LGBTQIA plus activism in our schools and communities of so-called British Columbia and imagine futures where everyone belongs. I'm your host, JC Fung. In each episode, we meet our neighbors, exploring through their eyes events that have shaped our schools and our queer communities in the unceded territories west of the Rockies. We learn about who they are, what it was like, and what they've learned along the way. This episode is one of three in a series called Intersections, where we talk to racially marginalized queer activists about their experiences in aspirationally inclusive spaces. This triptych comes to you through the Power and Voice program at CITR 101.9 FM. Warning, there's a single tiny moment of swearing in this episode in about 5 minutes. Check the show notes for the exact time if you want to skip it. We need to hear from the individuals who know, because they have lived anti-racist lives, what everyone can do to decolonize their minds, to maintain awareness, change behavior, and create beloved community. Bell Hooks in Teaching Community. I quit teaching in schools a few years ago. I was burnt out and frustrated. I had a hard time making sense of my experiences. So last year, I went looking for other queer educators who knew, who could help me make sense of it. And one of them was Chanel. In July, we met up at her home in Vancouver. That day, Chanel was getting ready to move, her living room half-packed, her windows open to the summer breeze.
I'm Chanel Tai, she, her. I'm a queer immigrant of color, and settler in Vancouver, which is the colonial name of the territories of the Squamish, Musqueam, and Tsleil-Waututh. I'm a daughter, I'm a mother. I am mostly able-bodied, except for my brain.
So, what was it that drew you to education?
I was a very bright kid, but I really didn't ever feel like I never felt like I belonged in school. And also, as you know, teaching is a very white profession in BC. It's a lot of cis white women, straight, able-bodied, all the, you know, tick, 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 all the things.
That's not just Chanel's impression. BCTF, the BC Teachers Federation, is the union that represents teachers in this province. In 2023, they did a survey of their membership. Of over 13,000 teachers across BC, 78% identify as women, 94% identify as able-bodied, and 83% identify as a non-racialized person or a person who has not experienced racism. If that last one sounds weird to you, lumping those two categories together, it upsets me too.
And so I really wanted to come to teaching for my students as my full self. For those kids who are BIPOC or queer, you need to see somebody who's like you. And also for those who are not, you need to see somebody who's not like every other teacher that you may have.
In 2010, Chanel got her start in BC's public school system teaching English to students in grades 4 to 6.
Just the most adorable time of life before the sass comes in, but like just when the independent thinking and like justice mind is starting. And I taught English, but I really was teaching social justice to children. Because you have a curriculum, you know, which is like big, broad ideas that you need to follow. You know, you're supposed to teach things like understanding what a primary source is and a secondary source is. And you can do that in a lot of ways, right? And so because I'm so invested in creating a different world for people who are marginalized, the way that I did it was, for example, when I taught grade sixes a few years ago, our primary documents were all from the Indian Act and letters from politicians to one another about residential schools. Just in using primary resources like that, you spark in children an understanding and a passion to change the way things have been and change the way things are. The other piece of that is that I've always kind of had this anti-racism kind of parallel journey. And part of that is because I'm a racialized person, I'm a mixed race person, and even where I come from in Guyana, there aren't a ton of people like me, you know, so I've always, you know, been cognizant of race and racial injustice. So as I was doing all this queer inclusion work, I was also doing anti-racism work with the BCTF. And I'll be the first to admit, every form of intersectionality is not my specialty. You know, like, I don't know everything about disability justice. I don't know everything about size phobia and fat phobia and things like that. But I do know that all of the pieces of us interact with all of the pieces of the systems to really fuck with people in really, like, life-altering ways.
A note on intersectionality. This term was coined by Kimberly Crenshaw in 1989. It describes the increased vulnerability of an individual to systemic discrimination and injustice as a result of their layered marginalized identities. After a few years in the classroom, an opportunity came up. In 2017, Chanel became the SOGI lead for her district school board. That's SOGI, as in sexual orientation and gender identity. Then, the following year, she became BC's provincial SOGI education lead. There, she supported teachers to help make their schools more inclusive. She worked across all 60 school districts in BC's public school system, plus quite a few independent schools. To support this work, Chanel did a master's in equity studies at Simon Fraser University.
Queerness is not just whiteness, and queerness is not just white wealth or, like, you know, cis white gay dudes or cis white families. And I think because of my lived experience and then because of my education, I could come at my work in the district and I could come at my work in the provincial role with the ministry and say, okay, so this is what I bring, like anti-racism and queer inclusion, but we need to have more than that, right? We need trans inclusion. We need disability justice. We need to talk about what it's like to be a refugee who's queer, you know, like an English language learner who's queer.
Now, she runs Chanel Thai Equity and Inclusion, which provides justice-driven training, workshops, and advising not just for educational institutions, but also government, nonprofit, and corporate organizations.
I am an educator. And the way that that looks like when I work with clients who are corporate clients is I say that I'm an EDI advisor or strategist. But really what I am is an educator.
Just the people that you're educating now are a little bit older.
Yes, yeah. And like a little bit harder to teach, honestly, than children. You know, there's certainly some pushback that comes from folks, even folks who want to or think they want to do the good work of inclusion.
Good intentions can be a great place to start, but it's not enough if you want to be a real ally.
Proposed changes will specifically include gender identity or expression among the protected grounds of discrimination in British Columbia's Human Rights Code. So, for example, a landlord may not refuse a tenancy to a transgender person. An employer may not fire someone because they're transgender. It is those kinds of discrimination which need to be protected against in British Columbia, and all British Columbians need to know that that kind of discrimination is not acceptable and it is not permitted under our Human Rights Code.
It's 2016. Minister of Justice Suzanne Anton puts forward amendments to the BC Human Rights Code. The bill is passed on July 25th. Gender identity or expression become protected grounds.
The Human Rights Code changes, and then all the departments are like, oops, let's catch up. Let's make sure that everybody is like in line with the BC Human Rights Code. Honestly, at the time, I was like, aren't they already? Like, it's 2016. Come on, man. But that was my reaction.
The Ministry of Education's reaction was to instruct all district school boards to update their codes of conduct and policies.
We're going to ensure safety for all of our students by having policies in place. Today's announcement is expecting every school, private, independent, and public schools to have policies in place to avoid and to have for anti-bullying policies to ensure that all students, including in today's announcement, is our LGBTQ students, our policies around sexual orientation and gender identity. It is unacceptable for any child, for any student, to be bullied in the province of British Columbia, and we want to do our part to make sure there's policies in place to protect and help some of our vulnerable students in our education system.
But Chanel's school board wasn't ready for it.
And then the leaders that I was interacting with were like, well, this is, I don't know what to do. I don't know what to say. Like, how do I make this policy? Who do I talk to? What if I'm uncomfortable? And when you're working in these spaces as a queer person, you have to be able to say to yourself, say it inside first, whatever it is your reaction is, say it inside first, and then say the second thing your brain comes up with out loud. Because what I wanted to say with these leaders is like, are you for real right now? You should already know this. You're in leadership. You lead everybody. And there was just like such a nervousness around, such a trepidation around it that I could not believe that none of this had come to them before. Yeah, but I guess I was naive. I guess I was just like, yeah, you'll figure it out. Like, obviously, in order to write this policy, you need to engage queer people and policy writers who understand what's going on. You need to look to the Human Rights Code. Like, don't you already know this? Aren't you the superintendent?
You've done this before, right?
Right? Yeah. Like, this is not the first time that we have included people, is it? So on a district side, I felt like I was fighting an uphill battle just to have leadership understand why it was important to protect us and who we were. Leaders didn't come and say, I don't want to protect queer and trans children or families or staff. They didn't say that. But what they did do is they did a lot of stalling while they figured things out, right? Well, we can't have gender-inclusive bathrooms at the head office because I don't know how I would feel about that. Like, it doesn't matter how you would feel about it. You are the leader of this district. You don't have to feel any type of way. Your mandate is to protect people. You can't have a district head office with no gender-neutral bathrooms if every school in the province is supposed to have one. The district head office should have one too. To me, I thought, like, this is an easy fix. Change the signs on the bathroom, send out an email being like, hey, here we're doing this thing. If you have any questions, talk to X, Y, and Z person. Again, so naive, you know? So naive. I just thought people would be down with inclusion, but no.
After the break, Chanel tells us how she navigates queer advocacy while BIPOC. So stick around. Thanks for joining us in our neighborhood on CITR 101.9 FM, broadcasting from the stolen and unceded territories of the Musqueam people, also known as the University of British Columbia. Welcome back to part one of In Our Gayborhood's Intersections Trilogy. Before the break, the school board Chanel Tai worked for was stalling on the rollout of gender-inclusive policies. And in 2018, she left that school district to take her work to the provincial level. She joined a local queer-run advocacy organization that worked with the Ministry of Education for queer inclusion in schools.
So in my provincial role, I was supporting all sorts of educators, from superintendents to assistant superintendents and directors and district principals, to do this capacity building to help kind of smooth out the transition from pre the human rights code change and then post the human rights code change. So our job was to support educators and educational leaders to be more inclusive, more queer and trans inclusive. But like everybody who was in leadership of that organization was white, wealthy, gay, male, except for one person. And that brought with it a totally different set of challenges.
It wasn't that the leadership didn't have good intentions.
What I saw was very well-meaning folks with very narrow experiences. Their circles' experiences were very narrow as well. So they really acutely felt their oppression, which is real. Like, that's real. I know that they felt excluded. They also could not get married legally in Canada. They also were made fun of on the playground. They also feared losing their family. Those are all real things. But they could not see how, in addition to that, other queers experienced other oppressions, and that their one experience of oppression could not translate to everybody else's. I think they really wanted to change education so that what they went through as children and teenagers was not repeated for the coming generations. And so I think the kernel, the core, the nucleus of what they wanted to do was beautiful and also not very relevant for people who weren't exactly like them in the queer community. And they couldn't see it. And so they needed convincing. They needed educating. They needed coddling. And that's exhausting to have to do. It's still heavy, which is wild. Like, it's still with me. The amount of work that I had to do just to get the people who were on my side to understand that our side was broader, that queer experience was broader. I mean, I guess nobody said making the world a better place was going to be easy. But I was surprised at how difficult it was to get them on side to kind of a inclusive queer inclusion paradigm. I remember saying over and over again, we need more trans representation in this organization. We cannot support teachers and educational leaders to do this work if we have no trans people or no non-binary people here? And they were like, well, we have you. And I'm like, I am not trans. I'm not non-binary. I'm just a girl in a button-up shirt. That's all I am. Short hair.
But like Bell Hooks says, every system has a gap. And in that space is a place of possibility.
One thing that I noticed that they weren't seeing as a gap was our resource list, which is a list that we kind of gave out to educators free. Here are some storybooks, here are some novels, here are some, you know, texts, films, etc., that you can use in your classroom as a jumping point, right? As part of like greater curriculum. It doesn't have to be about queer inclusion. It doesn't have to be about sexual orientation or gender identity at all. I was like, hey, did you notice that this list is really homogenous? Like the stories are all about a little white kid and their little white family. Or it's like two birds who are two bird dads who have a little baby bird daughter. And I was like, we need a more diverse resource list. I remember very gently suggesting that perhaps our resource team could also be intersectionally diverse, that maybe they will bring something that these two white gay dudes, who are educators and very fine human beings, I'm like, must say that, brilliant minds, do not have one drop of lived experience in terms of like being racialized, being poor, being religious minorities, things like this, being disabled. You know, like they, I'm not saying they are bad people at all. I mean, I'm not saying anybody is a bad person in this, but it just like they didn't understand. Because how can you understand? Like, I don't fully understand their experience.
Chanel kept at it, and eventually some BIPOC women and trans folk joined the organization. But in that, Chanel found out she still had some of her own work to do.
I got called out by our one trans rep for only having one trans rep. They made a suggestion for a resource, and all the rest of us were cis in that room, and we were all like, nah, blah, blah, blah. And I think we really hurt them, you know? Because I had been fighting against my own people within the organization, like queers within the organization, it was, I think, a little bit easier for me to be like, okay, I see, you know, to accept the challenge with humility. It was easy for me to say, okay, yes, absolutely. I really messed up there. And I didn't want that. I didn't want that person to feel like, A, they had to be the token trans person. B, that we wouldn't listen to them. It was a real, actually, personal reckoning that I had in that moment. I was really moved at their courage in calling me out. I knew I was ignorant, but I didn't see how much I wasn't really being an ally in that moment and in other moments. But I think in being a racialized person and a woman and a masked woman in this work, I really want to come at this work with humility. Like if there's anything I learned about like that fight within the community, to be heard, to be understood, to fight for other people's right to be represented and to have power and influence. And our community desperately needs to support trans inclusion. And I say our community, I mean the queer community. You know, like trans people are in real danger. To physical danger, there are political, like at any moment, our rights could be pulled. We see that south of the border. We see that in the States. And also what an honor for, you know, to be able to hear, hey, you're not doing a great job in this area or that area, and to be given the opportunity to learn. As a teacher, you're giving your students feedback all the time. And they're also giving you feedback. You're getting paid to give people feedback, to say, here's where you're doing awesome. Here's where you totally get it. Here's where, if you did it this way, you might understand it better. Here's where you clearly have no idea what we're doing, and that's all right. Let's figure it out. You know, like that's not the end of the story. That's the beginning of the next story. And I think that's a beautiful thing when people give you feedback in equity and justice work, is that you are being invited to be a student again, which is kind of fun. Like, learning new things is really beautiful and hard.
The opportunity to learn is a gift, even when it's uncomfortable. But some learning challenges our convictions and our endurance. And that discomfort, the frustrations, the opposition, it all builds up in a person.
It's exhausting fighting within a system. So existing as a queer person, existing as a BIPOC person, existing as a disabled person, a poor person, an English language learner, like all these things, it's so hard just to navigate the system. And then on top of that, having to almost, I mean, it really do be your own sometimes, you know, like really having to convince the people who are on your side to really be on your side. It's so emotionally draining. And it can be isolating, especially if you think you're the only one who's going through it, or you're one of a small number of people, like you're fighting against this thing with all of your energy, all of your strength, all of your mind, all of your body, all of your soul. And you're like, am I making any difference? Am I convincing anybody? Is anybody listening to me? You know, and that can be really disheartening. And I think, you know, the reason that people burn out in the movement and just in education in general, whether you're trying to fight the system or not, it's like, it's a lot. It's such a huge responsibility to hold these little people and bigger people when they're teenagers, you know, to hold these incredible, fragile, vulnerable, brave, creative people in your hand and feel like, I have to make a difference for these people, right? Like, I'm not just standing there downloading information. I'm trying to create a space where people can learn and where people can grow and where people can be themselves. And then on top of that, I'm trying to push back at a system that really is trying to make them one sort of way, that's trying to support the colonial project. The way that education here exists is because they were trying to re-educate Indigenous kids and educate colonial kids to continue a nation building project. Not that we have all day to talk about that, but you know, like, so you're trying to undo that. And also you have a wife and a life and a baby in my case, you know, like, Sam. But I like literally mean like I would come home and want to go to sleep. Like I would just want to lie down. Like pour myself an old fashioned or whiskey and just stare into the darkness because it was so heavy. I stopped reading because I just could not give myself leisure. I just needed to recover. Every day I needed to recover. So like when I talk about exhaustion, I'm talking about like literal physical, emotional exhaustion, just tired and tired of it.
So when you need support, where do you go?
I had to go to so much therapy, Sai, just so much therapy. And I was very lucky to also have very good friends who, you know, when my therapy money ran out, were very good at listening and who had shared experiences. And I think that's the piece that gets us through, is that community. And however and wherever you find that community is important, you may have to look really hard to find it. I was really lucky. I had BIPOC friends who were not queer, or at least not queer at the time, but they understood the fight against whiteness within nonprofit and social justice spaces. So they got that piece. But they didn't always really understand the queer piece. And so there's another piece of exhaustion on top of that. You have to find different pieces of community if you can't find an intersectional community right away. We are all different, right? We've got our little pieces of diversity attached to our identity. But for me, the exhaustion was both amplified and lessened by finding community. And yeah, they might not understand every single aspect of it, but they understand enough. Yes, we're all trying. We're all trying to undo this colonial project. We're all trying to destroy this patriarchy, this gaytriarchy, this whatever, you know? And when I say we're all, we're obviously not the entire, you know, population of the world, but there are pockets of people who see the hope.
Those pockets of community aren't just good for support and validation. Community also holds knowledge, experience, and space for rest.
There are some people who are just have so much fire, so much energy, so that when you're in your most exhausted, you can be like, you got it, girl. I'm gonna just take some time, you know. And there are other people who have been doing this longer than, you know, like they're the elders who've been doing this work a long time, who can tell you how to pace yourself, who can tell you you're not alone, who can tell you when you're being too naive, all these things, you know. And then again, like, there's just so much bravery and so much humility in these groups, in this community that you can find. Get yourself in some good trouble, find other people who are doing that. And like, you know, it took a long time to set the Colonial Project on the course that it's currently in, and it'll take some time to undo that.
But how do you undo it?
Don't try and fight it alone. The collective is always where the change is. And not everybody's in the collective. So keep your peace. Live to fight another day. I look at the younger me and how affected I was by some of the barriers that are put up either by the system itself or by the people who you think should be fighting with you against the system. And it was like really heavy, and it was really a lot. And I think now that I'm older and wiser, I would be like, okay, feel those feelings, but don't lean too hard into them. Just expect that there will be some more pushback than you thought there would be. And don't give it all your heart. Instead, find your folks in whatever kind of iteration that might look like. You might have to puzzle together or piece together something that works. There are lots of educators trying to do good work. So find those people. Go with the goers.
Thanks for listening to In Our Gayborhood and to our conversation with Chanel Tai. Join us next time for the other two parts of Intersections, where we learn to navigate and make meaning from these experiences. Be sure to check the show notes for links and references. If you like what you heard, subscribe to the podcast, share it with your neighbors, and drop us a line. You can find us on Instagram at InOurGayborhood. If you have a story you want to tell, a skill you want to share, or time or money you want to donate, email us at InOurGayborhood@gmail.com. So much gratitude to all the wonderful people who helped to make this episode happen. Thank you to Chanel Tai for sharing your experience and your space with us, to Kira Reed and Francis Rogers at CITR for their support, and to the Power and Voice program facilitators. Recording, script editing, and sound by S.J. Kirsch. Production, writing, and audio editing by me, J.C. Fung. In Our Gayborhood is made possible with listener donations and support from the CITR Power and Voice program. This initiative is made possible by the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Okay, bye.